people with me today.
Hi, my name is Nancy, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm really glad to be here tonight. I want to thank Chuck for asking me to share. I want to thank my friend Jackie for bringing me up, and I want to thank you for being here to listen to this. whatever it is, this is what a great, gosh, what a great time to be sharing with Thanksgiving here. Sort of a built-in angle on a talk, isn't it? You better be grateful, right? You should be grateful. People always say that to me, you should be grateful. Okay, so I'm grateful. I wouldn't be alive today if it weren't for Alcoholics Anonymous, and I really know that, and it's a privilege to be able to share my story with you and share what it was like and what happened and what it's like now. And I very much want to thank Sheila and Hank, too, because some of the things that Hank was talking about reminded me of my own story, too. A lot of the things that are very, very important to me today happened to me since I sobered up in AA. And that was on June 28th of 1976. And I was sober now 14 years and a few months. So, and when I came here, I felt so old and tired and I felt about 100, and I was, I was in my mid-20s. and I felt, what could possibly ever be good for me again, you know? And many, many things have happened to me because I live our life and live good things. Well, tell me what we were reckoned with when I showed up. I was a Catholic and Irish and those things. I was also the third of three girls, and my daddy died when I was 18 years old, and I was brought up in this family of women and didn't know anything about men for a long time. And that really sounds strange, doesn't it? Anyway, I was always lonesome when I was a kid because I was too much of a babe. My sisters were a lot older than I was, and so I was spent a long time alone. I had imaginary playmates, and I talked to myself a lot, and I was lonesome, and I had a lot of answers, and nobody around to accept my answers. And I was a frustrated, lonesome little kid then, and eventually I became tired. When I was 5 years old, I was tired, and luckily, something happened, which was a turning point in my childhood, and I was walking along the beach with holding my mom's hand and my aunt's hand, and they were jabbering away and not listening to me as usual, because I would always tell grown-ups what was wrong with their life, and they never believed me, you know. It was frustrating, so there I was, and they were talking over my head, and I started to sing, and they stopped talking. And it just went right in and had a big effect on me. And I began to just devote myself to singing and entertaining people so that they would listen to me, or so that I could count. And I went to Catholic school, and I got very good grades, and I was a wonderful elementary school student, and I sang. And then a tragedy struck when I was 13, and puberty set in. And I discovered that my songs and my grades didn't mean anything to anybody. They were talking about much more interesting things, and their action had been stepped up considerably. They were talking about boys, and I was in big trouble when it came to boys. I didn't have any information. I'd been growing up with all these Catholic women, so I felt sort of in a jam, and noticed that the singing didn't matter and the grades didn't matter, and so I started to run around with the, you already said, in the all-or-nothing kind of alcoholic thinking. I went from that to running around with the gangsters in Catholic school. There were three or four of us, and we were pretty awful. We smoked cigarettes in the bathroom and really shook the nuns up, you know. And they thought I was very funny, and it gave them an opportunity to teach me about life, and they filled me in on the other side, as it were. And I became excited by the information, and then I reached another turning point, and that was the morning that my best girlfriend and I stole vodka from her mom and took it to the bathroom at Catholic school at 10:15 recess. And this heavenly state I discovered with my gangster friends began to escalate as I mixed the drinks. I bought some orange juice. And even before I drank the drink, I started to get the miracle. Because my little pals looked at me with respect. And they were impressed. And I became, as we like to say, cool. And I really liked that. And then they had this drink, and the miracle just began to fold out geometrically. I mean, it just, my body was all set. I was an old and tired lonely kid, and that was serving me with me, and my newfound gangsterism was, had to be sort of fixed in the place, and I had those Irish genes, and well, everyone knows about Irish people, and I just loved drinking. Every morning it made me feel good, and I felt smart and sharp and pretty and nice, and when I looked in the mirror, I was all those things and more, and I didn't worry about walking at the end of the line with another tall girl in the morning, and I felt good, and I felt like I had a figure, and life had meaning, and then the bell rang. Going back to religion class. I turned my will and my life over the care of this whole thing that had happened to me in the next year I was in public school and became the nemesis of my mother's heart. And I went to discovered Hollywood, which was an antidote to Greendale. And even at that time it was, you know, might be vice versa now. I haven't lived here for a long time, but sort of coffee houses where I could sing and protest the Vietnam War and smoke cigarettes and marijuana and Houston Jacks and the country was going bananas and so was I and I felt and in a way I felt in harmony with things, you know, because it was a macro kind of thing. Anyway, I was having a lot of revolting experiences. And I said, all those, my previous activities of good grades and singing and being in school and everything went by the way, and I became truant, and I began to steal, and I was running around the hall, and it was all I wanted. I really liked living like that. I worked on my image, and I had a really ratted, high, tough hair, and I had big white lips and a little bit of a mouth, and I just talked around like that. Being tall became an asset because I could slip into cool mode, you know, and just slip around and lean and smoke and steal and sing. And that was it. And I loved going to peace marches. I didn't have any political savvy, but as a matter of fact, I voted the first time in my life in 1992. But I really liked to protest, so... When I was 17 years old and graduating from high school, I was at the stage of my drinking where I was talking to my car. And one night I told my car, we got to come down. And the car agreed. We pulled over and I went into another coffee house to come down. And when I walked in there, I thought, this heaven and earth just escalated again. And I saw these 26 musicians and they were wonderful. They were a collection of musicians. There was a piano and an electric piano and bongos and cello and congas and a violin and one guitar and a bass and regular drummer. They were like a mini United Nations. There was a black, a Mexican, a Italian, Czechoslovakian, Cuban. There was even a paraplegic in a wheelchair for the singer for Nobody Cared. They were blasting rock and roll in the key of Go. And, well, I thought they were great, you know, and I identified everything. I identified with everything. And so, I started in the room, I started saying sometimes I feel like a mother's child, and I thought I was good too, and we were called Jaywalker and the Pedestrians, and not once, but it was it was so hard to stop and start this group that we didn't actually have much of a musical future. But eight of us decided we really kind of liked this thing, and I floated across the stage at Glenna High School and collected some sort of partial scholarship to the California City Arts and Music and just tuckered my way out of there. Eight of us and Jay Walker and Thurston decided we really kind of liked this rock and roll thing. So we got serious and we rehearsed in somebody's kitchen for 3 months and we wrote three 45-minute sets, and we called ourselves Sweetwater, and we had our first big gig about October, and we opened for Janis Joplin and Big Brother and Holy Company at the Whiskey. And I never went to California's to Arts. I went on the road, and we got into rock and roll in the 60s, and we had a ball, and we were very popular because we were so zany, and we looked like a million United Nations, and we had this act and flew around the country and played out of rooms like the Fillmore East and Fillmore West and Denver and here and there, and we were the third act on at Woodstock, and no one knows that. It's not on tape anywhere except for me telling you that. Occasionally, in the backs of AA meetings, are people who do remember us. And their eyes are still rolling, and they say, they say, that was a good talk. I don't remember that part because there's more. Anyway, so all of this is happening, and then we were doing this national television stuff, and I was on the freeway, and it was December, and we had just done the Red Skelton show, and I got off the freeway, and I got into the car with me, and we were, you know, reasonable. We hadn't ingested any chemicals for probably 2 hours, so we sort of loved it. And I got on the freeway, and as I got on, there was a huge fender bender across the freeway, and you couldn't drive through. So I stopped my car, and it had been raining lightly all day, and it was sort of pouring misty evening hour, and I turned to my girlfriend, and I stopped my car, waiting to see how we could go through. And I said to her, Peter made it, right after I said that, I got hit by a truck. And he made an accordion out of my car, and nothing happened to my friend, and she got out, and was having an escalation, kind of took a new turn at that point in my life, because it changed my life in a very big way. My friend got out and started running around the room trying to find help for me, and it just a series of coincidences that we like to talk about in AA began to unfold for me that night. There just happened to be one off-duty nurse involved in a fender bender who found my friend, and there just happened to be one ambulance there, and there just happened to be one policeman there. And they all came back to the car and congregated, and this nurse, medical type, looked at me and told the officer that this girl's got to go because she could read. She understood what was happening to me. I had pushed that Buick still up 6 inches with my head, and I was completely out. And they put me in the ambulance, and they shut the door, and I went to Grandma's seizures. They took me to Glenna Memorial Hospital on the one night of the month. And all the neurologists in Southern California were having a meeting. And they were over there, and they all worked on me. And they all said, this girl will not live. No one can survive that kind of a blow and live. And so all the Irish clan came, and I have had all the sacraments now. And and you and I know there's a power greater than all the fine neurologists in Southern California. Because I lived, or am I doing it? And sometimes it's a nightmare. But, I knew who Tricky Dick was, and I came to, and but I want to show you where my head was, because I was already a pretty set alcoholic without knowing it, and I permanently lost the use of one of my vocal cords, and I can always come in, and I was drilling holes apparently, and stuff, and the cameras come, and I would say, thank God I didn't ask for mom, and I didn't even ask that much about what had happened. I just croaked out, "Do the papers know?" That's a rock and roll star. I mean, what is this? What's a little brain damage? You know, what's a lost vocal cord? I had a career to pursue, and this nonsense with those tubes and things. And after 6 throat surgeries and 2 months of hospital rest, I moved out of there, moved into a new room in Laurel Canyon, and I began to work with 2 of the finest voice people in the world. They say, doctor and a coach, and Bill Steinbeck, and they thought it was silly of me, but pursued it anyway, and I get a style that Lisa say she doesn't sing much, she sings cold. So, it was popular, semi-popular. But in any case, I landed a new record deal. I started running in Hollywood, and then I was publishing things, and Hollywood was works, and got a new deal. So I broke up after making 3 albums, so I got a new record deal, and I bought paid cash for $450 a sale, and got a rock and roll palace in Laurel Canyon, and had a higher power that, you know, actually, it was on the phone. It was here for $100 a week for noise, you know, send a check. And my whole thinking was, I just wanted this rock and roll thing, and I never made it. But that was all I was interested in. I had no relationships to speak of it. My family, which consisted of my mom and 2 sisters, they were so out of touch. They never knew what to say to me. And I just buzzing around Hollywood in this car and spending money and making a new record and being hipstick and cool. But my drinking habit caught up with me. And I had to switch from scotch and vodka because it just doesn't make me feel like it used to. And so I thought, well, and I guess I found a pamphlet somewhere, but I became a vegetarian. And I joined the health club, and I started drinking wine. And because I really loved the way wine made me feel, because I'm really a wineette, and that's my story. And the record came out, and I was lonesome inside, and I didn't have any skills, and this drinking was going on with me, and I just really began to lose my ability to play. And I went on a couple of promotional things for this album, and it was kind of blurred to me now. I do remember, though, that in a record company where I was signed, there was an awful nice lady named Lorraine. And Lorraine gossiped how to run office when I was on my day for 17 zillion years. I used to look at her and think, what kind of lady is that? You know, and I just didn't know what kind of think about her, but I used to be kind of drawn to her desk, and she's got quite a long time in front of her. I remember when I first saw her, when I showed up in Westwood, I think I had 51 minutes, and I ran up to her, and I said, Lorraine, here I am. Did you know? She smiled sweetly and said, well, I knew you were sensitive. And I never said a word to her about drinking because I didn't want to get into it. I didn't want to push this thing, but I need to steer her. Anyway, fate intervened again, and things escalated. One more time, and this record company went belly up, and I was on my own, and I couldn't muster the energy, mental or physical anymore, to go for it. I couldn't put another band together. I got up, and I would look at the piano, and it might as well have been thinking of going to the moon. It seemed so far away from me. And I was really nervous. I had a lot of anxiety. And I found a doctor, and that doctor said, well, you have a Dowman deficiency. Driven this seizures. And so then I was drinking this wine, and I was passing out and forgetting I was a vegetarian, and I went off and got some chicken and come to in the morning with these god awful carcasses in front of the frozen TV. I can't tell you how I suffered from those carcasses. Well, then I found another doctor, and he fixed me up. He said it was done. But I was missing. So then I got on the phone late at night, and I called all over. Anyway, things got Wilson. And so I got a secretary so I could at least look good, you know, to the world. And no one was knocking on my door. There was no business. I was not musical. I wasn't attractive. And my family didn't know what to do with me. I hadn't had a friend since high school. And when she hurt my feelings, I decided I would never do it again. So what I did was I got a secretary, and I got someone who drank just like me. And one day she got really sick, and I helped her. As she was being helped her get out of being sick, and I remember helping her thinking, I'm glad I can drink. She had a joint to help her. And the next day she called me and said she'd gone to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I said, you're fired. So then I was really on my own, and I just had two companions. And they were male homosexual drug addicts who cleaned my house and didn't drink my wine. And that was my life. And I couldn't go out anymore. I couldn't play the piano. Mrs. Alcohol cut out my ability to care about the only thing that I ever loved. And about the only thing that I really could do pretty well. And I just drank. And then somebody suggested that I could maybe call AA. And one time I did, and I called Westwood AA because they would understand me in Westwood. But some woman answered the phone, and she was a very nice woman. But I thought that she talked too much, and she didn't listen to me. And then I hung up the phone, and she told me about big spaces of time, that you do things, you don't remember what you did, and she called them blackouts. And I remember to this day hanging up the phone thinking, oh, they have them too. And I hung around with alcohol. I had to go a lot more around with alcohol. I got a black eye, and I got a split lip, and I got hurt, and I was bloated. I was 35 pounds heavier. I had bruises on my body. I hurt all over, and I never felt good, never. I hadn't felt good in years. I didn't know what that was. And the morning I got up, and my hand got up on a different agenda, got up like this. It was on a whole other calendar, another planet. So I held on to it, and I thought about my car accident. And I put it down and kept it up, and I willed it to stop. And nothing happened. And I had never not been able to control the body part when I had been drinking. And so I thought about the car accident, and it was Sunday, and I couldn't call anybody on a Sunday. And the panic and the sweats and the shakes and this awful rain and down and down and this hand going crazy and my whole life and just... That's when God can make his move, huh? And God presented a thought to me, why don't you call AA? And I knew that was stupid because that didn't work. They were missionaries and she talked too much. Nevertheless, my finger wandered into the phone and I called AA. This time we got a guy who was just wonderful. He was the essence of why the deal works. He was the soul and the spirit of Alcoholics Anonymous. This guy had so much love. He was pre-book AA because he listened to me. And when he told me on him, and when he listened to me, and then me, I was still me. And I had all this stuff. And then he'd tell me about me, but then he'd just listen and listen, and I talked. But every now and then I'd have to breathe. And when I took a breath, he made his move. Brought in his big AA guy, and he said, sounds like you need a meeting. But I'd be all wound up, and I'd have more to say, and I'd talk and talk and talk, and I'd take a breath, and he said, sounds like you need a meeting. So he got the last word, and I came to a meeting, and I had this black eye, and I put a lot of makeup on my eyes, and my eyes were match. I put on clothes that could have gone on their own if I'd given them money, because even though I had a lot of money, I didn't know how to take care of myself. I was 5 years sober in this program before I felt okay in a dress. I was 6 years sober before I got my first lipstick or ripped on any kind of, you know, attractive or contemporary look. I was 6 years sober before that happened to me. You know, I was still dealing with on this program. I was 10 years sober before I knew I needed people. Had to have them. So anyway, I got gigged out and was hitting the eye makeup and this stiff, smelly clothes, and I went down to this beautiful Sunday morning meeting on Ohio Street. And I walked up, and there were all this gamut of people there, yelling, people. They're all yelling, "Hi, we're so grateful to be sober. How are you? We're so glad to be sober. We're alcoholics, you know. And we're pink and white and pretty and clean and had sparkling eyes." And I thought they were terrible. They were the pink and white people of the first meeting. I never come to any other meetings, but they're always at your first meeting. I have no idea how they stayed sober. Where do they go? So I enjoyed them, and I sat down for this meeting, and I hated it, and I thought it was awful with my persona out here. I ran off and got on the phone, and I went back to one of his drug addicts room, and I sat with him, and he did his drugs, and sniffing and snorting and beeping and honking across the room, and I was drinking and talking, and I thought that was a relationship. And then he took a break from all his business and looked up at me and said, "You've really got a drinking problem." And then after he said that, I had a spiritual experience. Well, I've never learned how to explain spiritual experience, except to tell you that the bottom dropped out of my whole everything. All of me fell away from me. All of my everything fell out of me. I felt gone. I was utterly gone. Well, that was June 27th, 1976. And the next day, I put on a bikini and an old marble shirt, and I had an AA meeting directory, and so I told God, it was June, the typical June weather, and I told God that if the weather, if the sun came out, I'd go to the beach. If it didn't, I'd go to this AA meeting there in Brentwood. So I arrived over at the church in Brentwood about 10 in the morning, and the sun had not appeared, so it was the beginning of the sign for me. And I lay down on the line, and the gardeners mowed around me, and I kind of passed out. And then I went up to my first AA meeting, and by the grace of God and your love and your support and your truth and the steps, I haven't had a drink since that day. But I walked in, and I was cool, and I was tough, and again, I was accepted. You loved me because I was tough and rushed, and I looked terrible. But I was there. And I couldn't say I was an alcoholic, but you know, when I left, another lady left with me, and she had the journal of Alcoholics Anonymous going for her, too. And she had the essence of Alcoholics Anonymous going for her, too. And she left beside me, and she listened to me. And she shared a little bit about her. She never told me what was wrong with me. She never told me what I needed, but she listened to me, and she shared with me, and she accepted me, and that was how I had to start. And so I dove right into AA because I had nowhere else to go. And I was 55. Days of sobriety. When I was 54 days of sobriety, I discovered the Radford Club in North Hollywood. And I knew that I felt home there. And it became a home group for my first 2.5 years of sobriety. I'm very happy to say I've been to that. I haven't seen Alabama in 12 years. And she's a big, big part of my early sobriety. And I'm thankful for the things that she shared in those years. And when I was 55 days sober, I had a real miracle. I was at the TPSD club in Northwood. I was sitting in the back of the room, and I came to laughing from my gut, laughing from where I was. I never laughed in that place. I was laughed in drinks and laughed in head and laughed from making fun of people. The first night, the 55 days of sobriety, I laughed from where I lived. And in AA, I learned how to do that. It was my first spiritual experience of sobriety. And that's the truth. Then the next time I was 82 days of sobriety, and I had walked out of the new meeting at Radford, and for 82 days I had been just not liking it and pushing people away from me, and I was all vinegar, and I felt bad, and I thought about me all the time, and walked out, I had 82 days, and I had been, I guess, a pretty good meeting. 1:30, and I got outside there, and I saw a lady by the wash, a young lady standing there feeling terrible. She had terrible expression on her face, and she was mad, and she was just all hunkered over, lonesome, wanted to not be there and have nowhere to go. And I walked up to her and I said, "Hi, I'm so grateful to be sober." and I became a pink and white person. At that point, I was really dealing myself into Alcoholics Anonymous. I became very active in my first year. At one point, I was secretary of four meetings. Elsa C. down in Laguna, where I live, told me that you alcoholics are just like everybody else, but you overdo everything, and I have to agree with her. I didn't go to work because I was living on the principle. Then I got to be a year sober, and there was this blue-eyed, curly blonde-headed guy sat in the back of the room. He got to be a year sober, so we went roller skating in Orange County. And remember when we were playing on a roller skate, we hadn't skated for a long time. We were both wobbling. The fellow stood up wobbling, and he looked at me and said, "You're not going to hold on to me, are you?" And I said, and I thought, "I love you." And the next day we moved in together. I was really having a principle, and I didn't go to work, and I was being an AA couple. I was busy being an AA couple. And busy being. I went through the steps, and I did an inventory, and I put off those names because they owed me, and ran around, and at some point in this relationship, called H, met us and tried to intervene, but we were with us, and have us, and we were going along on each other, and but I got to be about 18 and sober, and I had a lot of pain about the amends they were making, and I wasn't making amends for people in music business who I felt had done me wrong. And in the night I got so angry. I saw someone on the television that I used to work with, and I got so angry, and I felt so cheated and so mad. And of course that's when God had a chance to tell us stuff. And he gave me the thought that I better make those amends. And I did. And I became lifted from it. And we got to be about 2.5 years sober, and we decided that we'd move down to Laguna Beach because we deserved it. And we found a nice place down there. A sure place. And I had to sell the car. And still didn't work, but I was giving a lot of good, real good AA talks. I was talking and giving good AA talks all over. And then COVID, things weren't good between us. I lived about 3.5 years of sobriety. I had major surgery on both of my feet. And the ice began to crack. And this night all began to change because I had to be in bed for 6 months. And I couldn't go anywhere. And I ran out of Harold Robbins' novel. And I started to read about spiritual living. And I thought I'd discovered it, you know. I was really. My friend wasn't doing so well, and our relationship wasn't very good. And one day we woke up and we said, "Our relationship is not very good. Let's get married." So we looked in the paper and we found a reverend who advertised, you know, to marry today and call Reverend right now. And who would call Reverend if he does it, you know? And I was really in the air, and I was spiritual people, and I was doing talking and stuff, and but inside of me wasn't good, and I was living with mine. And about a year later, and my feet had healed, and I had begun to establish real friendships with women in AA because they came to me and tried to help me with my surgery and with this recovery. And one lady named Bill was going to massage school at the time, and she sat at the bottom of my bed when my feet were first uncasted there. You know, like rooms are, if they've been casted, they're white and limp and fragile, and they can't go very well. And she'd sit at the bottom of the bed, she'd just rub those feet, and she'd talk to them, and she'd tell them they're going to be all right. And she did for me what I couldn't do for myself, and for my feet. And because these women showed me how to love and how to serve, I began to try a little bit to practice that, the real thing. And in marriage, ended in a disaster. My husband got drunk and the whole thing fell apart, and I had a big ubiquitous garage sale and got enough money for I went to one small room, and I had no job skills, and I had I wanted to go back to music, I thought, and I was dying again, and I was dizzy, and I didn't know what to do, and my self-deception just shattered around. I started cleaning houses, and I moved another relationship in the room, and I got off the podium for Alcoholics Anonymous, and I started learning how to take inventories that were much more meaningful, and I started to learn how to share with people instead of talking at them. And I'm so grateful now when I look at that. The relationship ended about a year later, and I was cleaning houses and trying to get myself out from under a big load of grief, and I went back to school because I had financial aid. And I was in school, and my brain caught fire. And I left school sober. And I loved the world that I discovered outside of me in school. And I had learned how to go to school because I learned how to be an AA and how to be a part of. I learned how to take action. I learned how to show up. I learned how to be teachable. And so I just had a ball going to school. I had a sponsor who was a teacher. And I would cry when I cried my first class. I got the sociology, introduction to sociology. And I hadn't had a brain damage. And I called up and I said, you know, I can't remember the beginning of the sentence. When I get to the end, and she listened to me. And again, the essence of this program, she listened to me and she'd share a little bit about her, and then she'd say, so there's no more meaning. So if you got an AA degree, fall back and transfer to Cal State Fullerton, and I got another degree at Cal State Fullerton, and then my life had really started to change. Someone gave me a gift of a trip to Europe. I went to Europe, I had my 11th birthday in Paris, and I couldn't believe it. And I was really grateful for that. I came back, and I had been hospitalized for 5 years through this education. My family said that they were pretty proud of me, they would help me go on to get a master's degree, and I applied at the University for a job in the writing center as a tutor. I was going to work and get a master's degree in English. I was going to work at the writing center and address to work. And I didn't have to hustle anymore. And it was really, really grateful for that. And I got this master's degree in May. And in case I felt to push me out to the cold world, and went around trying to get a real job. Never had a job. And I got a job. I got a couple of jobs. I teach writing at community college in Orange County. I'm teaching at 2 community colleges right now. I just had my first full semester this semester teaching. And it's because of AA. Because you taught me how to show up and be there and be responsible. You told me how to be teachable. A teacher who's teachable. I like that. And you just do for them what you do for me, you know. You tell me life is about service, and I really love that, and I really need that for my work. I really need that, and I get afraid. I'm afraid. I don't know how the politics are. I don't know what to do. I call my sponsor, and she's pretty good at this kind of thing. She listens to me. It's the best deal in town to be listened to. And she shows a little bit back, and she says, sounds like you're not a man. So things are going wrong. I moved out of the little room. I've got a nice place to live now. I've got a computer. I've got a cat. It's always not perfect. I have a car with 215,000 miles on it. It runs on God's love and oil. But I don't need a nice car. I'm really grateful for the life that's been given me. I have hope today. I never had it before. Well, I was going to a rapture club. There's this wonderful lady beside Alabama, this lady's name is Mary C. And Mary C would always get on the podium on Mondays. They have this big open podium, and everybody rushes up there. She'd get on the podium, and she'd say she was 24 years sober. And every day she asked God to keep her sober. And I thought, that's an amazing, wonderful deal. How could that be? How could that be? But it was clear to what this thing is, that if you want what we have, and I started to do what Mary C. does, and I started to get a mind's eye picture of me 24 years sober in the year 2000, and what I look like, and what I say, you know. So tell the newcomers not to take the first electron for their pleasure center. I thought I put my feet down inside AA, and I made a commitment for life in AA. And I'm very grateful for that. I've seen a lot of people who cannot do that. And I'm sorry, and I don't understand, but I'm so grateful for my story. I'm so grateful for my story. And the person I'm becoming, the person I am, it's because of you. And Mary C. and Alabama, the people who give us night after night their service and their love and listen to us, I just think that's great. 1 minute, eh? Okay, here's what I've been doing because of Mary C. She used to always say that being AA was a lot like the wedding vows. And I like that because I made a commitment for life here. So I want to marry you. If I want to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, for richer, for poorer, for better, for worse, and sit with them in half until they fall apart. Thank you for your eyes and your time.